Good morning. If we've got any visitors, I'm Kenneth Wellman. I'm going to give you a little bit about the Mason trip. I'm going to tell you this. First of the week, the preacher called me and asked me if I'd get up and talk about it. I said, well, yeah, I guess we'll. Brenda ran into him that week and said, how many is he going to talk? He said, just Kenneth. He's the only one that volunteered. So, but, you know, except for Jane. But I think Terry might come up. But anyway, I'd just like to thank God for the opportunity that I had to go to on the mission trip. And thank all y'all for the support and the prayers. I'm going to do something start off a little different off the trip. I've been asked over the years, I'll calm down here a little bit. It'll take me a few. I've been asked over the years, why go out of the country for a mission trip? There's so much mission work to do locally and in our state and in our, you know. Well, the reason there's probably numerous verses in the Bible that answers that question, but I'm just going to read you three of them that hits close to me. Matthew 28:19-20. Therefore, go and make disciples of all people, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Ghost, Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you, and surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. Acts 1:8. But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth. Chronicles 16:24. Declare his glory among the nations, his marvelous deeds among all people. Okay, I got one more thing before I get started good. I run into Tim Hambrick. You see here? I don't remember where we were. Might have been a Wednesday night. I have memory problems, but he asked me, said, how's your mission trip? I said, man, it was great. We got everything done we went to do. He said, well, I said, and more stuff, actually, than what we went to do. He said, well, were you the photographer? I was puzzled, you know. No, I wasn't a photographer. I just didn't see any pictures of the work picture, so, you know, I wonder if he was trying out for Saturday Night Live or something. All right, I'm going to start on the mission trip, and I'm going to go by my notes because, like I say, I can't keep a good train of thought. But we landed in Port of Lapeer, I think I say, that day. There's 14 of us. All 14 was assigned to a 50-pound duffel bag or suitcase or something that we had to take care of. And we all had two carry-ons, so we had like 700 pounds of tools and stuff for the trip. Well, we got it all out to the outside the airport, and they had a little short bus there waiting on us. Our driver, his name was Jethro, and we all really come to like Jethro. He was an awesome bus driver. He drove us all over it was just all over. Well, we got on the bus and took a 30 or 40 minute drive to Pastor Bryce's home. And that was that afternoon. He fed us supper. And I'll tell you about our meals at the end of this. But we spent the night, got up the next day, and had breakfast, and he wanted us to go to his church. So we packed everything up again that we had took off the bus. We drove to about 30 or 40 minutes to his church. And about halfway through the service, he asked all of us to get up in front of the church to tell what we did and why we were there. Well, I can only remember mine and Tim Talent's answer to that question. Tim Talent, he said, "Well, I'm an electrician, and I came to bring power to the people." So and I told him I was a waste treatment operator. So and I was there. Well, I told him I was there to be a light to the Haitian people, but they were already a light to me with their service. The first half of their service, they were just so into God. And I mean, we couldn't understand them, but you could see it in their just shouting and body motions and everything. But I'll go on with, we hadn't seen a lot of the area yet, but we took many, many bus rides. That's when I seen, one of the elders, when I said waste treatment operator, he's in the back. Of course, we had a translator, but he said, "We need you down here." So, but then after we took many rides through towns and streets and cities, we knew why, because it was, trash. You could feel this room and just smell the smell of it, and the pigs and goats and digging in it and chicken scratching it. And actually, some of them went by people actually digging through the trash, you know. After the after church service, they fed us sandwiches, and we started our five-hour tour trip back to the orphanage. We was 5 hours away from the airport. And when I say, I don't want you to think the country is trashy looking, but it was a beautiful country. The oceans and the mountains on our drive to the orphanage is some of the most beautiful scenery you'll ever see. And it seemed like, if you can imagine, they all live in little block houses, stick houses, mud houses. But in my mind, they were all, if you could imagine, all the developments around here, not in a development, but on side of the road, both sides of the road, just on for miles and miles and miles. That's just how they lived. To me, what I saw, they just lived on side of the road. Oh, okay. We made it to the orphanage. The next morning, we got up and went to our work site, drove to our work site. We drove on roads that you could never imagine. Rocks, rocky roads, crossed creeks, crossed heavy creeks, river, that the half of it, it was just a sheet of concrete they'd poured in the water, or laid in the water, I'm not sure. But I think some of us was talking, and we decided we averaged probably maybe 10 to 20 miles an hour just when we was off the road, and we was off the road a lot. But next morning, we went to the work site. We walked up a mountain, this church that we were going to put the rafters on. I can't even describe how steep it was to get up to this church. And it was a struggle for us old folks, but we made it. And they carried our supplies up on a little donkey. He carried most everything up. And the women, the Haitian women, carried the 2x4s that we needed. Okay, when we got to up into the church, that's when Leonard started working his magic. Leonard He's an awesome. He can do anything. So he's got his tape measure out, and I think Brian got his phone out with the, I can't remember what kind of arithmetic they used to do design and stuff. What is it, Leonard? Is it a, okay. But he sat there and designed those rafters. And we cut them out, cut one out, nailed it together for a pattern. And from there, started building the rafters, trusses. We probably spent the next day and a half cutting and making the trusses off our pattern. So Wednesday, we finished, that day, we put up a couple that day. I can't remember how many we put up the day we were building. But then the next day, we finished building all of them and started putting them up. And then it was on into Wednesday when we got them all up. I don't know if you know when you have to manually put up rafters, trusses. They're heavy. They were huge. Leonard could tell you the size of them. But you had to just pick them up, set one in over here, and then walk and pick them up and set the other end up here off of ladders, or you're on ladders both times. It took all of us plus a bunch of Asians to get them up there. But they're hanging upside down once you get one up. So we tied ropes to them. It's a trick Leonard learned probably somewhere. But anyway, we tied ropes to them. We had to... Dennis and Brian and Terry and Brian and an Asian boy was on the walls. Todd was up in the rafters with a rope. Somebody was on the ground with a rope. But once we pushed it up with sticks, Todd had the rope to pull it up. And this fella was supposed to stop it. But once you got up, stood it up, Terry and fella on the other side would tack it so to the first one we put up. And just anyway, I'll tell you a little bit. We had this is on in the back, but I'm gonna go ahead and tell you now. Todd and we had a couple of injuries or near misses. Todd and Brian. Well, while was up, Todd was up there pulling the fella on the rope forgot to stop it, so it went over and just mashed Todd's arm. Since Todd's not here, I'll tell you, he cried like a girl. But it wasn't hurt as bad as it scared him. I'll just say that. And then Brian, he was on the wall sliding the rafters. One mashed his hand. His hand stayed swelled up probably the rest of the week, but we didn't know it till he got down and was telling us he got hurt. Okay. Like on Thursday, we moved to our next church, our next work site. Well, they just wanted us to build their trusses. They wanted to go up two more blocks on their church to make it higher. So Leonard worked his magic, new design. We built trusses, built a pattern, and from that pattern, this time we cut out every piece and then laid them and tagged them and then just started building trusses until we finished building. On Friday, we finished building the trusses. We're through with all our work. But one day during the week while we're back at the orphanage, I got Matt wrote down, but that wouldn't be fair if I said Matt and Thomas did this. It was Matt Royster. Thomas and Matt Royster. The Pastor Bryce's truck was broke down when we got there. And they were in the process of taking everything loose to get the motor out. Well, Matt and Thomas and two Asians lifted that motor out of the truck and put it on back of the school bus so we could take it back with us when we went to the airport for them to rebuild it. I mean, they didn't just reach in there and get it. They put a 2x4 on the shoulders and lifted it out. But it was awesome how they... Oh, let's see. Well, while we're there, Preacher Bryce's SUV tore up too. So we was down to the short bus. If we had 5 hours away from the airport, and that was our only transportation. We said a few little prayers about the bus. We kept the bus. We wanted to keep the bus going. I'm going to tell you another story on Tim. We was going through this little town, and they'd told us, they'd warned us about taking pictures. But Tim, we'd slowed down for something. I don't know. It's pretty regular to slow down on the bus in them little towns. But he slowed down, looked out the window, seen these ladies sitting on the ground, on the sidewalk, and they was selling produce, or we don't know what they was doing, but he reached and took a picture. Well, she took in the, we blessing him out. I was going to say cussing, but I couldn't understand her, so I don't know what she was saying. And she actually threw something at that piece, hit the window. So we got real careful about taking pictures after that. All right, and I'm going to give you a little bit on a few meals we had, which was probably 95% with chicken legs. Now, that's good. That's fried chicken legs. But every night, they'd come out with a big old tray of chicken legs. And they didn't have refrigeration in Haiti or any kind of freezers or nothing. So they used garlic as their preservatives. So everything we ate was pretty garlicky. And Jane, she couldn't eat garlic. So she had a tough time with the meals. We never did figure out what to do with the rest of the chicken, though. That's all we... But on our last, well, every night, Pastor Matt would ask us, not ask, let me, we would have a devotion. Somebody would have a devotion every night. And every night after devotion, he would ask if anybody had a God sighting that day. And I think this was my God sighting was the night that we finished the second church. And the pastor's church, he had us all gather around and hold hands while we prayed. He started praying, and of course, Pastor Bryce was translating. But his words were so powerful, genuine, emotional, and yet so humble that I didn't need a translator. I knew he was talking directly to God, and God was there with us. It was worth the trip for me to have that God moment. That one moment was a blessing for me. And I thank y'all again for giving me this time to talk. Thank you.
Kenneth talked a little bit about those God sightings, and what I wanted to share was the times that I experienced God, not through seeing God, but through hearing. And so I just want to share with you a few of the sounds that we experienced in Haiti. And just to set the context, I want you just to imagine a heavy storm. the rain pouring down and the winds. Of course, it's not a storm that I'm talking about that we're listening to. It was Hurricane Matthew that happened in October that devastated the country of Haiti. Homes were destroyed. Roofs were torn off of churches. The churches that we worked on in Dory, in Warlow, in Menard, there's still other 30-some churches in Mark's denomination that need roofs. One church in Russo was completely destroyed. You'll see those in the video at the end of the service. Also, think of the sound, hear the sound of rushing water, of a river that's going, and what was just dry creek beds or just areas where water would come down was now gushing with all the floodwaters coming from the mountains to the sea. It cut people off from the towns. It cut them off from their food source. Some tried to brave crossing these waters and unfortunately lost their life. And so Hurricane Matthew was not, was a terrible, terrible catastrophe. In fact, so much that Matt Royster and myself, when we told them our name of Matthew, they didn't want to hear that name ever again. And so I think for the rest of the week, we had to maybe change our name and tell them something different. When we arrived in Port-au-Prince, a city of what should be 500,000 people was populated with 2 million people. No industry, no jobs throughout the island, through the country, so everybody swamped to the capital city, packed in there, living in just shambles, as Kenneth said, trash upon trash. But one of those moments that stood out to me, one of those sounds that I will ever remember, was the time we're able to worship at Pastor Bryce's church. I'll get the word out in a second. And you'll hear in the video just when they had a full brass band that was playing and just the sound of them singing to the top of their lungs and praising God. As Kenneth said, I didn't understand what they were saying, but we knew that they were praising God with everything they had. And then you'll see in the video just a few pictures of everybody that got up to share. Again, I asked for volunteers, for people to come and talk about their experience and what they wanted to go on the trip. And when I told Mark, I said, nobody volunteered. So instead, he just made everybody come up and share for their trip. And so I should have done what he did and just made everybody come up and share. Otherwise, I wouldn't be up here talking today. But if you do want to hear more about the trip, talk to anyone who went, and I'm sure they'll have a million stories to tell you. They just don't want to do it in front of the church congregation. As we made our way to the orphanage, just a few more sounds. I worked on the wiring team. We were able to rewire some of the churches, the roof that had been tore off. Hear the sound of a ceiling fan going. It's hot summer days or need a breeze going. We cut that fan on and you hear the sound of the air moving around, the motor going. We took down 9 ceiling fans. I think we hung probably 4, 8 or at least 8 or so ceiling fans. And those ceiling fans actually making it to Haiti was one of a God thing in itself, because we get to the airport and normally you can carry as many bags as you want to. If the bag is over 50 pounds, you can pay extra for it. We've carried boxes that haven't been in a bag before, and so we had 4 ceiling fans that we had taped together to carry down there. And basically we get to the airport and they say this isn't going to work, and so for 30 minutes we repacked bags. They even gave us old broken bags. People who didn't have carry-ons, we said now you have a carry-on, and we exactly had the right amount of bags that we're able to get all the tools down in the ceiling fans. God was with us on the trip from that very first moment that we were there. Another one of those God sightings, God sounds for me, was when we weren't doing the wiring team went and helped out those who were building the roof trusses. And so pretty much all you needed down there, if you were unskilled labor like me, was basically a hammer. And so everyone who had a hammer, and then plus the extra ones that we brought with us, it was all of the mission team plus the Haitians that were around there just hammering away. And for one moment, I just closed my eyes and listened to the sound of all those hammers just knocking away, nail upon nail, building those trusses that were going to provide roof and shelter for that church building for years to come, where people were able to gather and know that even in that poverty, in that country, that God still loves them and that God is present with them and God cares about them. What I wish I would have done was, instead of saying I'll be a part of the wiring team or be a part of the roofing team, I wish I would have just stayed and got to work with the children for the whole week. Hearing the stories that Luann and Kathy and Megan and Jane shared about their ministry, they got to go and work in the schools. They did puppets. They did Bible studies with the kids. Just hearing the children laugh and play when we were back. At one point, I heard them doing the hokey pokey, and I heard them doing the Macarena. And so those were sights to take in. Just hearing them learn about Jesus and making their own puppets, it put a smile on your heart. When I got home, I thought, finally, there'll be one night of rest that I'll be able to sleep the entire night through. But you know what happened? About 3 or 4 in the morning, I woke up. And I realized the reason I woke up, it was too quiet. There was no longer roosters crowing the entire night, or mosquitoes buzzing in your ear, or your roommates snoring to the top of their lungs for the whole night. I won't name names of who it was, but you can probably look around and see. Of course, they'll probably blame the preacher for that as well. But the one sound that I wanted to share with you and close on was the sound of the water pump. You see, every morning, right before sunrise, I'd wake up, probably the first one. I'd go on out, just get away from the snoring and the rooster crowings, and take a walk through the village, watch the sunrise. And as I came back in, one of the workers at the orphanage at the mission house, the church in that area, would get started with his first job of the day, which was going to the well pump that they had. It was a hand pump, and he would unlock it, and he would start pumping. And he'd pump water into a 5-gallon bucket, then pick the bucket up and dump it into a big cistern. They later on pump up to a higher cistern, which gave us the water pressure and the water we needed to have showers and running water for the restrooms. Justin, before, when they didn't have this well, would have to go every day to the river and put 5-gallon buckets of containers of water from the river via the donkey and come back and dump it into the cistern at the orphanage. But now he has this well. And so I joined in with him. So he would pump for a little bit, I would pump, and then folks every now and then from the community would come in and share the water source there. And just the whole sight of people coming to get water at that orphanage, at that church, knowing that also they can know the love of Christ as well, the living water that's there, was just a blessing. I won't say that every day I helped Justin out for the same amount of time. I think the first day I helped him for about 20 minutes, and then it got to be maybe 15, maybe 10 the next day, because I was sore having to pump that water. But he never complained. He always did it with a smile. This was his job, and it was just a blessing to be able to work beside my brother in Christ. And so as you watch the video and see some of the pictures and some of the need that's there, just continue to remember to pray for Pastor Bryce and pray for Justin, for those that are the orphans that are there, for the church and the pastors and the congregation in Warlow and Dory, and you'll see some of the needs that are there as well. And so if you would like to be a part, I know there'll be more trips that are going back. Go ahead and get your passport, and we'll, I'm sure, have a trip coming up pretty soon in the near future. This time we'll go ahead, Emma, and just show the video.